Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and I will be sharing with you Perek Zayin of Sefer Melachim. As in Perek Vav, this is a Perek heavily devoted to building. It is therefore complicated to present in oral form, because first of all, it is presented not so clearly, since we didn't see the structure in front of us. Not always easy to understand exactly what the building looked like. Secondly, it's a very long Perek, so to get it in within the amount of time that we want to will be a challenge. And third, the lack of visual aids will certainly hamper us, and especially lack of visual aids in a building that no one has ever seen, and that other than this recorded history here in Tanakh, we don't have any supplements that even claim to have seen it, meaning Midrashim and traditions in Chazal were traditions, but they were oral traditions. They were certainly not written until long after anybody who had possibly ever seen these structures had long passed away. So we will do our best. Pasuk Aleph tells us, "Beito banas shelamo shloshes reshanam v'yachal kol beito." He spends 13 years building his own palace. Rashi takes that in the positive, that tells us that when it came to the Beit Hamikdash, Shlomo worked hard and assiduously to get it done, and therefore it was done within 7 years. When it came to his own house, it was not as much of a priority. It did not weigh on him as much, and therefore it took him 13 years to build it. Va'even in Beit Yar ha'Livanon. Mea ama orko v'chabishim ama rochbo v'chushim ama komoto al arba'a turei amudei arazim v'chutot arazim ala amudim. So he builds, and this, the Radak at least takes this to mean, in addition to the palace in Yerushalayim, he builds a summer home, a sort of a home that was in a forest, so therefore could get breezes better and be more summery. And he builds it. Now, Levanon, we know of as being in the north where Hiram comes from, but Radak thinks that it was another Ya'ar, another forest in the environs of Yerushalayim that for some reason had the name Livanon, and it was there like a summerish kind of a house for a king's residence. It was 100 amot long, 50 amot wide, 30 amot high. Notice that's the same height as the Beit HaMikdash. It is perhaps the height that they were able to build at that time in order to make structures, and higher than that they couldn't quite do. There were four columns of cedar wood that were anchoring this, the Radak can see around the corners, and then there were cut cedar beams on top of these amudim. V'safun ba'erez mima'al al ha'tzila'ot asher al ha'amudim arba'im v'chamisha chamisha asar hatur. And then it was covered with cedar above the beams, and there were pillars, 15 in a row of pillars holding up these beams, holding up the roof of the house, meaning it's sort of an open house with a roof for, I guess, protection against rain or sun or whatever it is, and that's what's creating the structure. And then on the sides, you have ushkufim shiloshatuim umechaza el mechaza shalosh pe'amim. And there were window spaces in three rows, and the light was against the light, meaning the umechaza and the mechaza means they were right opposite each other, which would also create cross-ventilation, aside from lighting issues, if this was meant to be a summery home for the purpose of being cooler. This would create better cross ventilation, and you could maximize whatever coolness there was. And then all the door and the posts were square, rivuim shakef. They might have been in parts, as we've seen in the previous parak as well, and they also were opposite each other, and there were three rows of these. So that's one structure that he made, the Beit Yar HaLevanon. Then he has an Ulam HaAmudim. The Ulam HaAmudim was probably a kind of a ceremonial hall of some sort. My English right now that I'm looking at says a porch of pillars, but the point is it was a large structure. It was an Ulam, and it has pillars throughout. Amudim Asa Chamishim Amor. It's 50 amot long, which again, just to keep us in mind, is 75 to 100 feet, depending on how big you think an Amah is. And there's an ulam before that, and there are other pillars and thick beams and others. We're not getting all the plans here of all of these things. So that was one structure in the palace. Then there's ulam akisei asher yishpot sham. There was the throne room, as we would call it, which was where he would judge people. Ulam hamishpat asa v'safun ba'ariz. It also was surrounded with cedar wood. It was covered with cedar from Me'akarka arakarka, from floor to floor, probably ceiling to floor. Ubeito sheyeshev sham, and then inside of that, there was where he lived. There was the residence. Chatzer ha'acheret mibeit la'ulam. That was inside, beyond the ulam. Maseh ha'zehaya. It was also like all of this, meaning built in cedar and things like that. Lubayit yaseh levat paro shalakach shlomo kalom hazeh. And then he built her a similar structure. He built her, her meaning Bat Paro, his first wife, or the wife that we've heard about, he built her a similar structure. So it's not clear if he built structures for each of his wives like this, or at least minimal structures for each of his wives. And remember, they're going to be eventually 300 wives and 700 concubines. So there's a lot of building going on in Shlomo's life. Even these two main structures we've seen are taking up, in some sense, 20 years of his reign. And all of this, let notice, the pasuk reminds us, kol eila avanim yekarot, kimidot gazit, migorarot ba migera mibayit umichutz, umimasar ad hatifachot, umichutz ad hachatzer hagidola. All these were precious stones, and they were large precious stones, and they were of the size of hewn stones. Meaning, so if you think about the Kotel, you can look at the bottom of the Kotel HaMaravi of the Western Wall and see large hewn stones, and they have smaller stones up top. Question is, what size stones is being spoken about here? But these are large stones, and they are these, because it's not the Beit HaMikdash. These are sawed. These are made sure to be very flat and very perfectly aligned on either side, on all sides, and it's all the way up, meaning it's from the base all the way up into the top of the building and all the way out to the great court. Okay, pasuk yud, you said avanim yekarot, avanim gidolot, and there are large stones. There are avnei esra amot, avnei shmone amot. These are stones that are 10 amot, which is again 15 to 20 feet. Those are big stones. Even 8 amot is a very large stone. Umi lamala, avanim yekarot, gidol gazit va'eret. And on top you also have big, large stones of the size of hewn stones, of the size of the cedars that are being used as well. And around the great court, you have, aside from whatever trees, whatever wood we've spoken about, you have these large stones, and a row of cedar beams. You have it also in the Beit HaMikdash, and you have it also in the ulam of the Beit of this bayit, of this house. So you see that Shlomo HaMelech is mixing the use of large stones and the use of the cedar wood. Again, nowadays when we build and we construct, we have these large construction machines and machinery, Caterpillar Corporation, whatever corporations there are. As we watch Shlomo HaMelech doing this, the effort involved is tremendous, because a large stone like this, just the movement of it, let alone the cutting of it and the creating of it and then the building with it, is a huge deal. So if you imagine, if you're trying to build with stones like this, and you put one 2 inches off the wrong place, you then have to move a huge, heavy stone 2 inches to get it right. So they had ways to do it, obviously, but it's something to pay attention to, and then to wonder at the emphasis on building that clearly weighed on Shlomo HaMelech's mind. Okay, so having completed the structures, or its brief description of these structures, and of course, if you think about these are magnificent structures, you got to realize that the plans that we've been told do not fully describe them. You'd have to see them to really understand what's going on. But then there's another element. There's the internal furniture, or at least some of it. So pasuk yud gimel, we're told, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo Vayikach et Chiram Mitzor. Shlomo HaMelech sends, and he brings Chiram Mitzor. Now this is not the king of Tzor that we've been speaking about. So first of all, he's generally referred to as Chirom rather than Chiram. Whether that's significant or not, it doesn't necessarily have to be significant. But more important than that, the next pasuk tells us who this Chiram is. This Chiram is Ben Isha Almanahu, Mimatei Naftali, Vaviv Ish Tzori, Choresh Nechoshet, Vayimalei Et HaChochma Ve'et HaTemuna Ve'et HaDa'at, Lasot Kol Melacha Ba Nechoshet, Vayavu Al HaMelech Shlomo Vayaseh Kol Melachto. He is the son of a widow from the tribe of Naphtali. His father, even though he was from Naphtali, lived in Tzor, which is not in the borders of Eretz Israel, and he was a brass worker. And this Chiram, or the father, or both, was filled with Chochmah, Tvunah, and Da'an to do all sorts of brass working, of this kind of metal working. And he comes to Shlomo, and he does all of the brass working that Shlomo wants. So we have not yet seen a lot of brass working in the buildings that we're talking about, because these are internal pieces of furniture or vessels or items or tools that are going to be inside the Beit HaMikdash, and we'll talk about them in a second. But I find it interesting to consider that when it came time for Shlomo HaMelech to build his Beit HaMikdash, he turned to a foreign king for the wood. Right? The Arazim came from Lebanon, from Hiram. And now he turns to a Jewish person, but it's a Jewish person who has been raised in a non-Jewish country and who has acquired apparently a set of skills and abilities that were not prevalent within Eretz Yisrael, because if they were, we would assume that Shlomo HaMelech would send for somebody within Eretz Yisrael. So it's a Jewish person, and his name is not a Jewish name. I know that because the king of the country that he was living in had that name. So this is always an interesting thing to watch and to think about. To what extent are we able to, what extent is it acceptable to acquire these kinds of external forms of knowledge, right? The Beit HaMikdash could not have been built properly or as beautifully as it was without this Hiram. Does that mean that it was a great thing that Hiram's father from Naphtali moved to Tzor? Or is it that once it was done, we then are able to take full advantage of it? So this is a complicated set of questions. To live outside of a Jewish environment, and then he passes away, we have no idea of how much Torah his son knew. We have no idea of this Hiram, who's going to now build for us. We have no idea of how dedicated to Jewish observance he was, even as compared to other people of his time. We don't know. What we know is that he acquired all sorts of important forms of wisdom. Rashi, I think, here comments that Chochmah and Tevunah and Da'at are the three pillars of wisdom upon which the world was created. There is this theme in Midrashim that the building of the Beit HaMikdash and the Mishkan in the desert at the time parallel the creation of the world in some way. We'll see that later in this parak as well, so that when we see Hiram filled with Chochmah, Tevunah, and Da'at, of course, his Chochmah, Tevunah, and Da'at is limited to brass working, but it is in some way a reflection of the depth of wisdom that's possible, at least within this one area of Melacha. So he comes to Shlomo HaMelech to do this Melacha for him. Vayatzar, and the first thing he does is Vayatzar Shnei Hamudim. He makes two great pillars, Nechoshet, of brass. Shmonesre Amako Matam Udechad, 18 Amo High is one of them. Vechutshte Mesre Amah Yasovet Mudashini, and the other one is 12 Amo around. Now the Mefarshim generally assume that these two columns have the same exact dimensions, and therefore they're curious as to why in one case you would say high, and in one case you'd say around. So one option that's offered is that it tells you how wide they were. If you know how tall something is, and you know how its circumference, you can figure out exactly its proportions. But then why not say that on one rather than on both? And the answer is just to tell you they were both the exact same. There are more drashic versions of what's going on here as well, but that's the simplest way of reading it. Then he makes two sort of crowns or tops for these pillars, mutzak nechoshet, molten brass, chamesh amot komata koteret ha'achad, v'chamesh amot komata koteret ha'sheinit, and they are five amot. Then he makes svachim maasei svachad, these are nets, gidolim maasei shasherot, made of chains, for these kotarot, for these tops of the pillars, asher rosh amudim, shiva lekoteret ha'achad, seven for each of these pillars, and he makes these amudim, vayas amudim, ushnei turim saviv ala svacha ha'echad, lechasur lekotarot asher al rosh ha'rimonim, v'chein asa lekotarot ha'sheinit. And then he makes the pillars, and he makes rows round about them for the svacha, to cover these things that were on top of the pillars, and then the pomegranates, the rimonim, which we've not met yet, but they were apparently on these pillars as well. V'chotarot pasgitet, v'chotarot asher al rosh ha'amudim maaseh shushan ba'ulam arba amot. But then, separate from that, there were capitals on top of the pillars in the ulam, and these were maaseh shushan, which by English says lily work. They were sort of flowery. These were four amot. And then you have chotarot al shnei ha'amudim gami ma'al milumat ha'beten asher le'iver ha'svacha v'rimonim matayim turim saviv ala kuteret ha'shinit. So this is going to get complicated that we don't have
visual direction of it, but there were above these two pillars, there were also more tops, and then they were, if you have this svacha, you have this network, then you have things sticking out from there, and you have rimonim in rows around on the top here, so you had those, you had these kotorot like that as well. So it's a complicated network of the pillars, of the amudim, and then on the top you have this whole fancy thing going on that's, I think, insufficiently described for us to fully understand what it is. So now he sets them up in the ulam, and he calls the right one, and he calls the left one, Boaz. And the pasuk reminds us in Kaf Bet, and then at the top, you have some kind of a flower and lily work, and then you've completed the building of the amudim. Now, the question, well, some of the, there are many questions to ask about these amudim. So first is, where did Shlomo Melech come up with the idea of the amudim? Second is, why are we giving so much attention to the amudim? That question is a very hard one. I'm not sure that we have any good, easy way to know exactly why Tanakh chose what to emphasize. In the case of the Yachin of Boaz, it's also true that they captured Jewish imagination more than one might imagine. There are several Sfarim known as Yachin of Boaz, in addition to which, Rashi reports the tradition of Chazal that fits in with the Midrashim that I mentioned earlier, that the building of the Beit HaMikdash reflects the building of the world. In that context, the Yachin and the Boaz are seen as reflecting the moon and the sun, is the way Rashi has it. That the Yachin reflects the moon, and the Boaz reflects the sun. Rashi doesn't tell us exactly what that means, nor does the Midrashim more than that Shlomo in building the Beit HaMikdash is in some way recreating the building of the world. I saw, as it happens, the Abar Benel, and I don't generally read the Abar Benel. It's long, and I don't have the time for, in this context, to present too many of the Abar Benel's ideas, but he has one interesting thought here, in which he says that he thinks that the world is run in one of two possible ways. There's nature, and then there is divine providence. And sometimes it runs purely by nature, or by the nature God set up, and sometimes God steps in. And he says that's the two ways the world works, and that's what Yachin and the Boaz are. Just in terms of the sun and the moon, it would be interesting to suggest, and I don't think he makes the exact connection, but it makes a similar connection, that the sun is reflective of nature as it runs, and the moon is reflective of a more interceding God. I suggest that because that's one of the suggestions that's been made as to why Jews make their calendar on the basis of the moon, that while the world operates by nature and the sun, we follow the moon, and we can therefore intercalate. We add months, as we are going to be adding this year. We add months to the calendar because it is a view of the world in which we have more activity, and by extension, we would assume that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has more activity as well. If any of that is what Shlomo HaMelech meant by the Yachin of the Boaz, then it means that not only was he reflecting the creation of the world, but that he saw the building of the Beit HaMikdash as a structure and whose furniture was supposed to remind us of our basic beliefs about how the world works. So it wasn't a structure for sacrifice only, because the Yachin and the Boaz have nothing to do with sacrifice. It was a structure about belief in Hashem and experiencing Hashem and experiencing the presence of God and understanding how that works. So that makes it somewhat interesting. Pasuk of Gimel now. So back to Hiram, what he's building. Vayasad Yam Mutzak Eser Bahama. Now he makes what it seems like a huge mikvah. And there's a whole discussion in Chazal about whether the Kohanim could really be tovel in this mikvah, since it seems to be a brass item, and there's a whole discussion that perhaps the water got into it without any piping, and therefore it wasn't mayim shuvim, and therefore it could have been actually used as a mikvah. But it's a huge, large thing of water. It's 10 amot from one side to the other. Misvato al tvato. Agol saviv chamesh ba'ama kamoto vekav shloshim ba'ama yasov oto saviv. So it seems to be round, and then, but it also seems to be square. There's a discussion with Chazal, maybe the bottom part was square and the top part was round, because it says it's 30 amot in circumference, which would suggest that it's a circle, because it's 10 amot across and around 30 amot. There's a discussion about why it's not exact. That's could be that it could be, from my opinion, it could be that the Tanakh just didn't want to go into the whole thing because 2 pi r, right, times the radius, pi, or pi times the diameter, so pi is 3.14, 15, whatever the numbers are. So it's a little more than 30 amma. Maybe it's exactly 10 amma across. But if one of these measurements was just a little bit off, then it would be perfectly reasonable to come up with these numbers. Pasuk of Dalet, Ufkaim, mitachat lisfato saviv saviv moto eser ba'amma, makifim et hayam saviv, shnei turim apikaim yitzukim biyitzukato. And under the brim of it, round about, this is my English, I'm just reading, under the brim of this yam, of this big thing, there were colocynths. Pekaim, mitachat lisfato saviv saviv moto, I think these are openings in Eser ba'amma. They were 10 cubits in 2 rows cast within it in the same casting. So these are decorations. These are Omer al shnei asar bakar, shlosha ponim tzafona, shlosha shnei ponim yama, shlosha ponim negbo, shlosha ponim mizracha, v'yam alayim minamala. And then it's based on, it seems to be, on oxen, obviously not real oxen, and they're facing all the directions of the world. North, west, south, and east. And then you put this yam on top of it. And their faces are outward so that their hind parts are inward. I don't know. It broke. Ve'ovyo tefach. Usvato kimaasei stivat kos perach shoshan. Alpayim bat yachil. And its thickness was a hand breadth, and it has the brim like the brim of a cup, like the petals of a lily, and it contains 2,000 bat. So it's not clear how much a bat is. I happen to see that the Art Scroll English suggests that it's a bat is somewhere like 6 or 7 gallon. Vayas et hamichonot eser nechoshet. Now he makes, so there's like 13,000 gallons of water, 10,000 gallons. Huge amounts of gallons of water in this bat, in this yam. So if it was for a mikvah, it certainly held more than enough water for kohanim to be tovel in. It's just not clear that's what was going on. Vayasar mechonot eser nechoshen, arba ba'ama orech ha-mechona ha-echad, arba ba'ama rochba, v'shalosh ba'ama komata. He makes 10 mechonot. So these mechonot are stands for places the Kohanim could wash their hands from. And he makes 10 of them from brass. They're 4 amot is the length of one of them, and 4 amot was its width, and 3 amot was its height. So it's a square thing on a base. And the work of them, they had ledges, they had enclosures and ledges, and v'alam izgarot asher ben ha-shlavim arayot bakar u'churvim v'al ha-shlavim ken mimala mitachal arayot v'la bakar loyot ma'asei morad. So they've got all of this decorative work. They have on the borders between these ledges, there were lions and oxen and kruvim, and there was a base, and then there were hanging work, meaning it was all very intricate and decorated. V'arba'a ufanei nechoshen v'chona ha-echad, and you have 4 ufanim, which are reminders, or which are reminiscent of the Ofanim that Yechezkel talks about in his vision of God's chariot. So you have this word being used here, some kind of a wheel work, and you have 4 of them for each of the mechonot. V'sarnei nechoshen v'arba pamotav k'tefot lahem mitachat lakiyor k'tefot yutukot me'ever ish loyot. You have plates of brass, and on the corners there are shoulders, and then under the actual washing station, there was wreaths, and upihu, v'beit lakotev ramala ba'ama, ufia agol ma'ase kein, ama v'chatzi ha'ama, v'gam apia miklaot mizgarotehem v'ruba'ot lo agulot. The mouth of it within and above was an ama. Again, we're trying to describe something that we can't know, we haven't seen it, but these are washing stations, a very intricate and very very beautiful work. And the mouth was round, but it was an amah and a half. And it also had engravings and designs on all of these things. So you've got these wheels under these borders of these mechonot, and the height of a wheel was an amma and a half. So an amma and a half again is like 2 feet, 3 feet, somewhere around there. Those are big wheels. And the work of these wheels is like the work of a chariot wheel. Of course, when you read this, you'll have to think whether we mean a regular Merkava, or could this be a veiled reference to the Merkava referred to in Yechezkel in terms of God's chariot? And that's the question of how well did Shlomo HaMelech manage to reflect divine truths in this Beit HaMikdash? But you've got axles and rims and hoops and hubs, and it's all made of melted metal. And there are four shoulders on the four corners of this mechona, and they made up the base of the mechona. Over Rosh mechona, chatzia ama koma agol saviv, al Rosh mechona yidotel mizgorotah mibena. Then you have the top of the mechona, you have a half ama around it, a sort of a mouth, and then you have on the top of the base, you have things holding on to it, and a border. And, Padaglamed Vav, Vaivatach, Al-Luchot Yedotea, Ve'al Mizgerotea, Keruvim, Ayarot, Vitimorot, and all of this he makes decorations of Keruvim, of lions, of palm trees, Kimar Ish Veloyot Saviv, as each one had enough space for it, and the wreaths for it, so he made decorations in it. Kazot Asaites are Mechonot, so he makes 10 of these Mechonot. They're all the exact same, so that's part of its beauty, that he's able to replicate his design on each one of them. And obviously we have to go extremely quickly because the parak and our time, because the parak is long and our time is running out. Now he makes the chiors, they're going to go on the mechonot to wash hands and legs. There's a lot of hand and leg washing that Kohanim have to do when they're serving the Beit HaMikdash. And each of the chiorot has Arba'im Bat. So Arba'im Bat, if we thought that 2,000 Bat was 10,000 gallons, so that Arba'im Bat is like 200 gallons of water in each of these Kiyorot. Yechil HaKiyor HaAchad, Arba Ba'ama HaKiyor HaAchad, and they are four Amot, each of the Kiyorim. Kiyor HaAchad HaMechon HaAchad, you put one Kiyor in each Mechonah, Lesser Mechonot. Vayter Mechonot, Chamesh HaKetav HaBayit Miyamin, you put these Mechonot, five on one side, on the right side of the Beit HaMikdash. Chamesh al ketav habayit mismalo, betayam natan miketav habayit haymanid, kedmah miyum dekavan. The Yami puts also on the right side of the house of the Beit HaMikdash, in the south side, as you would try to enter, because if you have to go to mikvah, you would then do it then. Pasuk mem, vayas kirom al hakiyorot, vadayayim, vadamizrakot, vayichal kirom, kiram laasot et kol ha-melacha, asher asal ha-melach bo-beit Hashem. Now he makes the kiyorot, and he also makes yaim, which are shovels, and mizrakot, which are basins, which are used for cleaning off ashes and for throwing incense and things like that, or shoveling off things. So he makes all this stuff and he finishes it. And he also makes amudim shnayim. I'm sorry, now we're going to summarize what he did in Pasuk Mem Aleph. Amudim shnayim, v'kulot ha-kotorot ha-sharosh amudim shnayim, the tops of the pillars, v'asiv ha-chot shnayim, and the two nettings, v'chasot ha-shtei gudlot ha-kotorot ha-sharosh amudim, to cover over all of this. And then 400 pomegranates that were in this network, in this lattice work that he made. Two columns of them in each netting. To cover over these coverings of the pillars. And the ten washing basins on the mechonot, on their bases. Retayam ha'echad, and the big yam, the big sea, the big mikvah, and a bakar, shnei masar, tachar ha'yam. And then the 12 animals that were under, the 12 oxen that were under the yam as the base holding it up. Retasirot, retayayim, retamizrakot, vetkol ha'kilim ha'ile, asher asachiram la'melach shlomo beit Hashem, nechoshim ha'urat, and then all of these other items, the pans, the shovels, the basins, and all of these things which he made, all of them of well-made brass. Bechikara Yardei Yitzakam Avelech, B'maveh Adama, they did it in the lane of the Yardein. They cast them in the clay ground there. There was a place where you could cast brass. Bein Zikot, the Bein Sertan. And he doesn't even bother to count up the weight of all the metal that he's used. In other places we've seen Shlomo Melech talking about this number of animals that he used every day, this number of people, and he counts it high, right? 150,000 porters that he had. And yet here, there's so much brass and so many kelim, he doesn't even bother to count them, he just doesn't count them. Vayah Shlomo et kol hakelim asher beit Hashem. Vayah nach Shlomo et kol hakelim mirav mirav mirav. No, sorry. Vayah Shlomo et kol hakelim asher beit Hashem. Eit mizbach hazahav et hashulchan asher alav lechem apanim zahav. So then he also makes the kelim for the Beit HaMikdash. Notice, he makes new kelim, and yet we don't find out very much about them. He makes the mizbach hazahav and the shulchan that's going to have the lechem apanim, and he makes that out of gold. So he either he doesn't make them, and he really means he uses or fixes up the ones that he had from Moshe Rabbeinu, or he remakes them. Veta minorot, chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismolif ne'adavir zahav sagur. These are certainly new. In addition to the menorah that was made in the midbar in the desert, Shlomo HaMelech makes 5 minorot for the right of that menorah, and 5 minorot for the left of it. And they are lifnei adavir, before the Kodesh HaKadoshim. They're made from pure gold. Va'perach va'nerot va'malkal chayim zahav. And all the parts of it are gold as well. The flowers and the candles and the fire pans. Va'zipot va'mizamrot.
Let's just finish up the parak from Pasuk Mem Tet. Va'namanarot chamesh miyamin v'chamesh mismol lifnei adavir zahav sagur va'perach va'nerot va'malkal chayim zahav. Va'zipot va'mizamrot va'mizrakot. So he makes these 5 extra, he makes 10 extra menorot. 5 on each side of the main menorah. Vasipot, and then he makes all these other vessels. Vasipot, vamizamrot, vamizrakot, vakapot, vahamachtot, zahav sagor, vahapotot, ladaltot, habayit, hapinimim, the kodesh hakodeshim, ladalte habayit, lechal zahav. Makes all these other vessels, tools, things for the bayit, he makes them as well. All of Zahav. He finishes all of the Malacha for the Beit HaMikdash. And then the Pasuk notes that he finishes all his work, and then it points out that there was all this stuff that David HaMelech had set aside for the Beit HaMikdash, and that Shlomo HaMelech does not use it. He brings it to the storehouses and he doesn't use it. The Chazal suggested it's because Shlomo understood and realized that his house would be destroyed and could not bear to have David HaMelech's holy items that he had put aside with such firm and good intentions, every part of Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and therefore he rebuilt the whole thing himself. If we had time, and we don't, obviously we're over time already, but that is something worth considering, the question of how we respond to our parents' legacies, how and when we feel that we have to redo it because it wouldn't live up to what they were honestly hoping for. So that's thoughts and ideas for another time. Have a good day.